Animal Time, only here on IndieMedia.ie with myself, Thomas, and I. Today we're coming to you from the Pet Expo. Well, the Pet Expo has been a sort of a steady feature every year in October. Last year I was here as a pet psychologist giving a talk. Also because Wild Time, this is the 56th edition of Wild Time. So a lot of the people that I will be talking to actually were once guests on my show. Now, I was just saying it to the listeners that lots of the people that I meet here were on my show. So were you, Silver.
Yeah.
And I said last time I said her, she's probably worth her weight in gold. So tell me a bit about what made you come here today, and is the Pet Expo any good to your business or to your awareness raising?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah? The more people you can reach, the merrier. I mean, it's all about awareness, isn't it?
It is indeed.
And this is the perfect spot for it.
So do you I mean, sometimes, you know, when you have things like this, you either get the people that just come in with their spoiled pooches, and then you get sort of people that say, oh, I didn't know that there are problems. Mm. Are people sometimes surprised when you talk to them about ferrets?
Oh, absolutely. Most of the times the first reaction is, oh, rat, or ah, weasel. They should be in the wild. No, they shouldn't. A bird or a ferret or an animal, I should say, is as good as its owner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's as good as it's taught to people. I mean, at least because I work with dogs a lot, people have a general understanding that it's not a good idea to sit on a dog or something like this, you know. But when it comes to birds, people say like, Jesus, why would I care?
I'd say it's different when you actually own a bird. When you're an owner, then you know what problem it is to have a bird. Birds are not pets. You shouldn't have them.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have them in your house at all. I mean, you can't give them what they have in the wild.
Yeah.
So leave them in the wild.
And it's also interesting when you have birds that, like in the case that, you know, for Hogan, the bird that I look after at the moment, he apparently has been bred for this stuff. But it's interesting to watch him because he knows exactly how his life should be.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. They do.
They absolutely do.
But there's a big, really big communication problem here to actually give it to us. And they do. They do it by biting. They do it by screaming. That's how they tell you that they're not happy.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what can I say? I mean, we help people who have a screaming bird, but we give them a total different understanding of what it is to be a bird owner.
Mm. If you have people, and you know, I mean, I personally think that most people, you know, unless when you do the research, you know you shouldn't have a bird. Mm-hmm. But nobody does, because you come in and the people say, oh, look what a lovely bird, it's only £25, I buy him. That's reality, isn't it? I mean, that's why...
But it's reality, it's available for them, and then you have these booklets that actually tell you, like, you know, you put it in a cage and you give them seed and they're beautiful and that's it. Like, they're trying to sell, they're trying to make money.
Exactly.
They don't care whether the bird will die in 2 months' time or anything like it, or start biting your children, or they don't care about that at all.
Exactly.
They're very emotional creatures. They don't care about that. They just see the money rolling in and that's it. I mean, I understand pet shops. I mean, that's what they have to do, sell. But I advise the pet shop, don't sell the bird itself. Sell the happiness that the bird needs. Yeah. And that's it.
So what advice can you give someone that says, okay, I'm going to keep them, but is generally interested in making the bird's life better? Is there an option? Is there any advice that you could give them?
Well, there is a book that everybody, I think everybody with an animal should read. And it's from Karen Pryor. It's called Don't Shoot the Dog. Mm-hmm. And it's about positive reinforcement, and which means that whatever you do in any animal, in being quiet, being the more love, being accepting the situation that they're in, basically.
Yeah.
That's what you can do with it. And what I advise people to do is do research and more research.
Mm.
And don't think about yourself, think about the animal.
Exactly. So anyway, you're listening to Wild Time. I was just talking to Silva here from the... exotic birds and ferret thing. I have a show called Wild Time, which is an animal welfare show. I'm an animal psychologist by trade, so this is my rock star life. And every year I come here just to interviews, and then I put it up on the internet and, you know, to raise awareness. So if you could just tell me who you are, because it's not television, people can't see you, so they'll have your names. And then tell me a bit about Piata. I think this is how you pronounce it, is it?
Pata.
See, if you're not Irish, I'm telling you now.
Irish word for pets.
All right. See, you always learn, you know. I've been only living here for 9 years, and I still... You know, with names, you know, and stuff.
We wouldn't expect you to know that.
That's nice. Sorry, I'm off the hook on this one. So tell me a bit about what you're doing, you know.
Well, my name is Patrice Campion, and I come from Chicago originally, but I live here in Ireland now. My family would be Irish. I'm also a psychologist, degree in qualifications and membership.
It's so good because sometimes I tell people, like, you know, there's not enough of us.
Right, there isn't, absolutely.
So it's brilliant that you're here.
Yeah. Well, I'm very, very pleased and honored to be here because I really believe in pet therapy, and I know that it's going to take time yet because it's still being introduced and still being discovered. And I think when we talk about psychology, we look for a lot of scientific findings in the field, so it may not be able to be quantified. Do you know what I mean? But this is more anecdotal, exactly. Although we can't discount that as being scientific. So when people have a qualified, when people's lives are improved by the presence of an animal, then we can't discount that, you know, even though we can't say objectively what it is that...
And also, you know, a lot of the stuff that when you work as a psychologist, you work on what they think and how their brain works. So you have to dehumanize the family with regards to their pets. So I say to them, like, you know, don't think what you say he understands automatically. You know, it's all these things that giving the dog credit for who he is, yes, is not always easy. No. You know, and I always say to the people, I mean, I've been living here for 9 years, you know, and I say, because I studied a lot in the UK, you know, we're 10 years behind the US and 10 years behind the UK. We're just starting out with these things, you know.
In this area, it mightn't be a great thing, but there's a lot of good things to say. There's a lot of good things behind being 10 years behind America. So we can learn from their mistakes as well as their...
And we can revolutionize it.
Yes.
You know, and get onto the papers and all that kind of stuff.
You know, but it's also a really good thing to understand what we're talking about here. When we speak about pet psychology and when we talk about behaviorism and how people such as those who are living in residential nursing homes or maybe children in terminal illness, and why is it that they're taking something out of it? But we have to always understand that we're human as well. And our human intrinsic connection to animals is very natural. Yeah. So we shouldn't really be dumbfounded by why we can't quantify this. I mean, this is just really essentially who we are as people, as a race. So I think that there's an awful lot of natural, holistic intentions going on as well. You know, we're starting to become a little bit more aware that, you know, we've tried all the other models of therapy. We've tried many other things. Well, let's go this path. And so we're finding that sometimes in many cases, in conjunction with other therapies, that these are really, really taking on, you know, a very, very good outcome. You know,
I always describe myself as being a complementary therapist because I do. I'm a holistic animal healer as well, but I also do shamanic healings. So I do a lot of stuff. And in the beginning, when I started this 7 years ago, there were 3 people when I gave a talk, and 2 of them I knew. And now we have families coming, so we have come a long way, you know. So what's the biggest difference between sort of Chicago animal life and Dublin animal life?
Well, the dog's nothing. You couldn't just...
For myself personally,
I'm being raised in an Irish environment in Chicago, my mother being born and raised in Ireland, and my father's side as well. But I think that just geographically, it's an entirely... Ireland's just a small country, and I think a lot of times when we try to compare USA to other European nations, and Ireland especially, I think we have to keep in context the vast... geographic international space of America. And there's just such a huge mix of cultures. And Ireland, while it is growing and you're starting to see a whole lot more cultural diversity, we're still a little bit holding on to the roots for a lot of good reasons.
I mean, to be honest, like, you know, it used to be a farming country.
Yes,
so it will always be a bit more difficult for animal therapists to get through. But tell us a bit about, you know, with therapy pets and all that kind of stuff. What exactly is it your dogs do? Or you do with the dogs?
I think it's the human that is bringing the pet to the environment of the where the people are living or visiting for the afternoon, for example. I think the dog just does what he does or she does. The dog is just a dog.
Yeah.
And I think in time they also adopt this learning that they understand that this is a different thing than, say, staying at home or going for a walk in the hike in the mountains.
Their
dogs are...
Job.
Yeah, they know. And certain types of dogs will definitely... look forward to that, and they show. I mean, we can see the results, and you couldn't mistake it. They're very, very excited to do what they're doing. And in the beginning, they might just be a little bit overly rambunctious, or they might have to be curtailed and shown. So this is why we have training programs for them, and they don't automatically just go into, say, a therapeutic environment. They have to pass the test. They have to go through rigorous training. They have to go through an awful lot of measures. Each organization is different in their approach.
In your case,
in my case, what I would say to entail, first of all, that the animal is of great, very sound health. As I'm also a canine communications I have qualifications in dog handling and registration and all that. So I, for me personally, what I would look for is how this animal has been raised in its own home, in its own environment. Would the dog be socialized? Would the dog understand that there is, you know, rules and laws of his own in his own home, so that he would be able to be easily, or she would be able to be easily controlled in an environment, say if they had distractions, that they wouldn't react to them.
It's also interesting when you say controlled, you know, a lot of people sort of say, oh Jesus, when in fact, you know, they are pack animals, and it is the hierarchy and the structure that they actually love. Yeah. You know, and we have to understand that they are pack animals, and if you want a happy dog, you know, that's just not just my opinion, it's just my experience, then your pack has to function.
Absolutely. You know, the human species is also based on energy, but animals show it so much more obviously because we use our vocalization to communicate. But before we speak, we are using our energy to perhaps reveal. So, but the dogs, because obviously they don't speak verbally, but they are speaking in their own body language, their structure. So their energy systems, as you know very well, is how they interpret who's the leader. So they know if you're the leader because of the way you behave and the way that you show them you're in command of the situation. So that's what I would look for as far as selecting an animal. I need to know that this animal has that understanding and that he isn't searching, or she isn't searching to be the leader because of the missing energy of the leader and the human. So we have to be sure that that animal understands that. And unless they do, we have to train them for that. You know,
you have to understand that they will go, like all of us, through changes.
Surely,
and they become adolescents and wrap themselves in poo.
And we have to understand why they do the things they do. And so that's also very important, that the people who are going to be taking the animals to the environments, that they have a bit of an understanding of why the animal behaves the way he or she does. Exactly. You know, we have to respect them for where they come
from. Also, be less judgmental about it, because when you're human, you would just say, that's plain stupid for a dog to wrap himself in poo. And I always, when I give talks and I explain to them that they basically do this because in the wild the alpha male would eat first, so he eats the strongest smelling organs, and they can't do that, so they use poo, and then they come home and you wash it off. They think, oh, probably I didn't do that right. He does it again, you know. Exactly. And all people do is they get annoyed and wash it off, and then probably sometimes even hit the dog because it's so annoying. So, wouldn't it be easier just put him on the lead and walk him around it if you can't handle it differently?
Yeah. You know, and even so, even I always thought that sometimes, like when my Rottweiler would roll in that and poo, as you call it. I thought she was, what I would believe is that she's also hiding herself once.
You notice this a lot in dog parks, actually worse.
We have to understand their natural way of living. We have to respect that. And I don't believe that we are using animals as far as using them. I think that we are not exploiting them. I think this is a wonderful way for the human race to understand the evolution of our own awareness as the gifts that the animals can bring to us. So hopefully in the end, we will promote a better life for them.
You know? Will always have people that say dogs shouldn't work, but it's a different thing. I went to an event last week where pit bulls that have a very bad rep did weight pulling, and they were really lovely dogs. On the one hand side, they did a lot for the dogs because you look how beautiful they are, yet they're not built for weight pulling. They pull 8 times their weight. It will have an effect. I'm a canine massage therapist, so it will have an effect on, so I can't say this is a good thing. You know, yet I do understand where people come from. What they wanted to do is get the energy out and show that they're nice dogs. Yeah. Apparently it has to go hand in hand with, you know, what are their bodies really made for, and is this the proper way? So awareness is just such a big thing.
Yes, as a behaviorist, I do not, you know, we do not subscribe to the breeds dictating behavior, but we will understand that a breed does dictate the ability, the physical ability. I mean, it's their...
And also the short temper.
Yes, for example, I have a Belgian Shepherd, and he is never happy until he's actually picking up a large branch in the forest and moving it.
Absolutely.
So he's a worker, and he's so much happier. And I can see it in his face and his eyes, and there's no disguise.
And that's how simple it's sometimes is. You give him a branch and he just walks off, you have a happy dog.
And put a backpack on, some weights in it, and he's the happiest boy, and he's so bored unless he's working. Okay. And the same with my Border Collie. She has to be doing something. Oh, jeez. So I have to really keep her stimulated. And so it's just understanding the breed, because not all breeds would have the same, you know, they weren't selected and bred for the certain roles that they do play, unfortunately.
A big problem is the research, because a lot of people go by cuteness. You know, we get that a lot when we have the problem with we have to match people to the animal. People fall in love with a certain animal, and I can tell them straight away, look, you know, it's not a dog for you because of your working hours and the way you live your lifestyle. And I always say to them, like, you know, has it ever occurred to you that if a dog you know, if when you pick up dogs, if God wanted them to fly, they would have wings. Because I work a lot on dogs that have muscle wastage because they get carried around all day.
Plus,
they get very aggressive because they never get socialized. And people look at me like say, oh, Jesus, go back to fucking Germany. You know, they get very annoyed with me. You know, for saying that. But that's why I welcome another psychologist here. Because you know, there were times where women weren't allowed to vote, and where women were like, you know, you belong in the kitchen, and they weren't given any consideration for their own intelligence.
Absolutely.
And I know people, you know, don't want to be compared to dogs.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is, it's not different being not in control of your life.
Absolutely. There's a lot of mirrors here.
Yeah.
And we really need to be sure of the reflections that we see in our own dogs.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What is it that they're soaking up our environments and speaking back to us by the way that they behave? Of course, many people wouldn't understand that. It's sort of a technical thing that you need to sit down and take
see it first. Yeah,
and do the research. Search yourself. I mean, this was the same for me. I lived in Spain for 10 years before I moved back to Ireland about a year and a half ago. So for me, it was the same. People were like, "Go back to America," you know.
Exactly.
But I'm not the. I'm just the messenger. Do you know? And I'm not creating the law. I'm just saying, here's what we believe. This is the reason.
In my case, it's just because, you know, we sound like Klingons. It's just the accent, you know. So I get it a lot when I go sort of onto an Irish stage. Jesus, who is this fella? You know. So there's another thing here, like, you know.
Sure, but I think that's true in any culture. I think any society will always, you know, as an outsider, you know.
I also think sometimes, you know, being a blown in, as they would say over here, is not a bad thing.
No.
Because you have experience from a different country, and we have loads of issues with dogs in Germany as well.
Everywhere. I mean, when I worked in America, when I worked in Spain, and now I'm working here, the issues are the same. This is not a national issue. This is a human, global issue.
Yeah.
Everything that we're discovering about animals now and bringing to the awareness of the general population is worldwide. I mean,
also, you know, when you look at dog behavior, I always refer to the blueprint behavior, meaning that a dog that rubs itself in poo in Dublin would do the same thing. Another dog would do the same thing in Japan.
Yes.
So it's not a taught behavior, you know. It's and we call it blueprint behavior because basically it's
right.
Sort of, you know, that's
sure.
What the brain tells
sure.
you. What I think changes people is when they see that everything an animal does is communication.
Absolutely,
you know?
And that's all that they. Do you know? I was quite fascinated to find out just recently that in fact in 2005 in Australia there's archaeologists. Their names don't come to me at the moment, but they found Paul Tuscan, I think that was his name, and he discovered through his digging and through his unearthing of artifacts that in fact 100,000 years ago, and forget 10,000, 100,000 years ago, that early human learned from wolves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so
they've been teaching
us everything.
We know this when you know, because I took up shamanism because I was a psychologist.
Okay.
And so, like, you know, so I understand why they did it, but I just didn't understand sort of, you know, how it came from.
Yeah.
And when you look at shamanism, everything happens on the premises that they have a soul, which, again, to a lot of people, it's like, you know, they don't have a soul. People say, you know, I absolutely believe that. But it's also interesting. The first thing they say in all their books is like they call the wolf the teacher.
Yes.
And when you look at the social structure of a dog, I'm actually surprised how well they live with us, because we're not really that structured.
No, absolutely.
You know, because they're so dominant.
We're primates.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Biologically, that's what we are. But where did we take that? See, scientists and biologists and anthropology and every one of the disciplines have still not able to put together the links. But now, recently, in the last couple of years, they're starting to question.
Yeah.
Well, hey, maybe it's because the wolf came to us and the wolf taught us how to care for our young. Because that's not. There's a lot of things that the primates don't do that we do as humans.
Yeah.
So we have to explain.
Exactly.
That. So perhaps it's this territorialness that we have as a human species.
It also just limits us, isn't it?
No, absolutely.
Because you go and you say, like,
yeah.
Well, you're primates, end of story.
Yeah.
So you would not
say,
well, you know, how can I learn from a canine?
Yeah.
When I talk about evolution, I have a talk called Evolution from Wolf to Dog, where I just explain how things have changed and how you can see still wolf behavior in your Jack Russell.
Sure.
Therefore, it would make much more sense to be dog-like in your behavior towards him when he shows things, which is actually completely common sense.
Surely,
you know, there's still this thing that says, look, you know, God made the earth in 7 days. And I said, look, you know, it took him 2 days just to do Germany.
Yes.
You know, so they, you know, so I said, look, you know, one thing has got nothing to do with the other.
Yes.
You know, but a lot of people just feel a bit offended by it because they think it's some sort of anti-religious thing that I do. Which is actually not the case.
Not at all.
Just, you know.
No, I think the more that the human race evolves, hopefully, I am hopefully speaking in positive terms, that we evolve with our awareness, that we have to become more aware and stop thinking inside the box, go away from all the things we used to know and that we were taught, and question it. Question everything, because that's when you start to unearth a lot more possibilities.
When you become less conditioned.
Certainly. And the conditioning responses that have been ingrained in us, culturally, socially, spiritually, everything, we can start to question as we get into more research and unearthing all kinds of clues.
And it's also interesting when you do this sort of, when you just say, look, you know, there might be another way here, that doesn't mean that the people that taught that to you didn't mean it, and it doesn't mean that you dishonor them.
Not at all.
You found another angle.
No, because when we look at the generations before us, they were always inspired by, hopefully inspiring us as their generations to come. Hopefully that's what we're doing now. As we evolve, hopefully it's for our children and grandchildren and the ones that will come after us, take better care of the environment. This is a holistic thing. We're talking about taking better care of our animals, our environment, our people, ourselves as a race. No more of this, no more of that. In order to get that far, we need to start thinking outside the box.
That was actually brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Take care.
So you hear all the noise. There's a lots of doggies here. You're listening to Wild Time only here on indiemedia.ie with myself, Thomas Janak. We're coming to you today from the Pet Expo. Hi there. I'm not here to scare you because everybody runs away when I come around with a microphone. My name is Thomas. I have a show called Wild Time. It's an animal welfare show. I do the Pet Expo every year. So can you tell me a bit about the Irish Therapy Dogs? What exactly is it you do?
Okay. Irish Therapy Dogs, we're a national organisation, and we provide a pet therapy service to care centres.
All right.
By that we mean we have owner and dogs teams, after very careful assessment, fully insured and so forth, they make a visit once a week to a particular care centre, and they bring all the comfort and joy and happiness of dogs to the people in the centres there. Mm. That's basically what we do. We're nationally organised, and we also have a special programme running in several schools at the moment with special needs or autistic children, because apparently autistic children are very happy, in tune with animals, exactly, yes, and they will read to the dog where they won't read to you, or they won't read to me, or they won't read to Brenda.
Yeah,
you see?
Amazing,
yeah, it is quite.
I mean, I have this theory, I'm a holistic animal healer, so I have this theory about the energy of things, you know, and animals, for instance, when you have this sort of disabled animals, which I don't even like the term, you know, they don't see themselves as disabled.
No, you know? That's what we always say, that a dog walks in, it couldn't care less whether you're well or sick, rich or poor, healthy or at death's door.
Overweight or skinny.
Overweight or skinny, yeah, right.
What probably people interest is like, I mean, it's difficult to answer anyway, but what dogs would suit, what does the training entail? Can you give us a bit of background, how does this work?
Yeah, surely. We accept any dog, except a dog that must by law be muzzled.
Because
obviously a muzzled dog is not very pleasant.
It probably sends the wrong signal, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As I said, the dog has and the owner working together as a team pass an assessment of suitability.
Right.
Now, this is to make sure, as regards the dog, that the dog is friendly, welcoming to people, tolerant of being handled and pawed and so forth, and hugged and squeezed, and also that the owner is a suitable personality and so forth. And the owner must also demonstrate a complete control over the dog in all situations, because that is highly important.
Yeah. Yeah. How can people contact you?
They can contact us in several ways. We have a website, irishtherapydogs.ie, or they can contact us on our phone number, 01, they're up Dublin area, 218-9302.
How long are you up and running?
We're running now for a little about 18 months.
Say again?
About 18 months.
All right.
And in that time, we have grown so fast, it's unbelievable.
Mm.
Because at the moment we have, about 85 visiting teams all over the country, up and running.
Uh-huh.
We have about, between 20 and 30 more.
We're over 100 being processed. We have about another 30 or 40.
Yeah.
And it's from all over the country.
Yeah.
So you see that there is people want this. There's a need for it.
Huge demand.
Yeah.
Huge. It's lovely to go in and see the reaction of elderly people as well.
Yeah.
That they can be sitting there, no interest really, and suddenly their day changes when they see the dog.
They start even talking to each other. Sometimes they don't even talk to each other all week, and then the dog comes in. It's also great for their mobility. Sometimes I see them sort of throwing balls as best they can, you know. Yeah, and sometimes the dog was like, I'm not chasing this one.
Yeah. And it's nice to have someone to come in and chat to them, you know, because the staff are excellent with them and all that, and family. But it's nice for going in the dog and they just sit and rub the dog and feel very at ease.
It is therapeutic anyway. I mean, we know that, you know. Even when you have people that are very skeptical, when you go the scientific road, you know, we all know that, that the heart rate lowers when you have a dog, and it's just it's just a very harmonious thing to have, you know. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Hello. Sorry to bother you. My name is Thomas. I'm an animal psychologist. But in my rock star life, I do radio. So this is my rock star life. And my show is called Wild Time, like I said. I'm covering the Pet Expo this year. And my heart is always where the sanctuaries are, even though I work in a sanctuary that has a no-kill policy. I work with traumatized animals only. But sanctuaries, you know, are always in need of funds and understanding, and it's very difficult to match the owner to the dog, and people don't get that. People think, like, you know, if I go to a sanctuary and you have a dog, why don't you just give it to me? So you know, so can you just explain to me, to the people that they really think, you know, I deserve a dog and I want one, you know, why there are questions?
We ask a lot of questions. We want to match the right dog with the right person, and for a number of reasons. We want to make sure the dog doesn't come back, that the dog is placed in the right home the first time, and people see a cute face, they have a favourite breed, but don't understand what that breed entails or what that particular dog will entail. So we need to make sure that they actually are prepared and their lifestyle is right for that dog.
And for the age and all that kind of stuff. You know?
Exactly. And people will often come to us saying, oh, well, I want to get a dog so I can start walking. Whereas we prefer people, you know, to take a dog to match their current lifestyle, because you actually won't walk that much extra once you have a dog. It might last a couple of months. Exactly. So we try and educate people to the different breeds or point them to the right dog in the sanctuary that will suit their lifestyle. It might be an older dog. It might be the opposite breed to what they thought. But they've come back to us a lot of the time and said they couldn't believe they adopted the dog. That was the wrong kind of dog they went for, but it absolutely suited their lifestyle perfectly.
So it is, I still know, I mean, from my experience, it still remains difficult. You know, a lot of people say, like, you know, you never know what you get. You know, you might end up having a traumatized dog. So there's a lot of stigma attached, when in fact most dogs, you know, get surrenders for all sorts of reasons or get dumped somewhere, and they're not bad dogs. You know, so what are the main things that people sort of throw at you when you say, look, you know, they all deserve a home?
They want to know, well, I only want a dog that's fully trained. I only want a dog that's house trained. I only want a purebred dog with papers. And they'll come to us saying these kind of things. And we do try to let them know that the dogs wouldn't be with us if they were 100% perfect. That's just the way it is. Some of the dogs, like you say, come in for very genuine reasons, but a lot of them have small issues. And to try and get people to understand, they are only small issues, very workable.
And again, you know, because I'm a psychologist, I work a lot with owners and their pets. A lot of them have pedigree dogs and they don't work well.
Absolutely. We do try to make sure that everybody understands the requirements of that dog. And the requirements are more than what the dog looks like. Yeah. It's more than buying it a nice collar and a good bed. And with a lot of the dogs, the popular dogs, they are working breeds. And they need to be working, either walking a lot, very involved in family life, doing agility, obedience, something like that that will keep them active. And then you'll have no problems in the home. It's a bored dog creates problems, and a frustrated dog, we find, is what creates problems.
And also it creates health problems, because if they're not exercised and get sluggish.
Exactly, and they get obese, and sometimes they get a little bit mental. If they're cooped up, they're not occupied, and that's, again, when you get a lot of the behavioural problems, maybe nipping or that can arise from frustration and the brain gone a little bit funny, you know.
And so you still blame the dog as usual?
Of course.
If people want to contact you, how can they do this?
They can ring the sanctuary on 087-2944-310.
Okay. Do you have open days? I mean, apparently people have to see the dogs. Do you have opening hours?
Opening hours, we're open 6 days a week. We only close on a Tuesday to run our clinic. So 6 days, we're open between 12 o'clock and 4 o'clock.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks. Anyway, you are listening to Wild Time only here on IndieMedia.ie. With myself, Thomas Janai, we're coming to you today from the Pet Expo in good old Dublin. And we're moving swiftly on. See what else is here. You see, what I don't do, honestly, we don't stop for the people that just, you know, sell foods or all sort of stuff, you know, because we really want to check out the people that work with animals, that offer therapies, that, you know, offer training solutions and all that kind of stuff. So that's what we're here for.